Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans from around the world. Visit her website at starfuentes.com. Then join her here every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we will be taking questions. 657-383-1612. Today I have a vibrant lady, a bright soul. Catherine Cominos. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Catherine?
Yes, you are, Star. Hello.
Hi, I'm so glad to have you. Catherine, how did you get started on your spiritual path?
Kicking and screaming.
Oh, boy.
So most of my life I spent it in a professional environment. I worked in the Pentagon as a science director. I worked in academia. I was very left-brained and career-oriented. Then in 2000, I guess the divine wanted to play a joke on me and just pulled the rug from under my feet. My life turned upside down. My late husband was diagnosed with a glioblastoma multiforme, which is a very invasive primary brain tumor, and was given 3 months to live. I felt like the world was coming to an end. My life had shattered. The night that I received from the doctor the diagnosis and there was no chance of saving his life, it was about 8:30 or so at night when the doctor told me that. I left the hospital. I drove home, and on my way home, I heard a voice. I was passing a Catholic church, and I heard a voice that said, "This time, go inside." And I just started cursing. I won't say it on the radio, but I was using the F word, cursing the heavens, cursing God, cursing everything for ruining my life. I drove a little bit of a distance, and then I decided, you know, this is insane, picking a fight with all that is. So I turned around and went back into the church. It was late by then. It was after 9 o'clock. There was hardly anybody there. But I felt a presence, and it's the first time. I was an agnostic up until then, so I really didn't believe. But I felt a presence, and I just sat there. It was the worst day of my life. I felt totally shattered. And I was staring at it was a Catholic church, and I was staring at I would say icon of the Virgin Mary, and all of a sudden, I was transported somewhere else. It was in the Himalayas at a Tibetan temple, which I didn't know at the time, but I was overcome with a peace I cannot describe. And it lasted for a few seconds, but it was very real, and I was not in that church. And then my logical mind got involved, and it all went away. I was back in the church. But that peace stayed with me, and that was my first experience with spirituality.
And I imagine that your book, Swimming in the Ocean of the Divine, An Odyssey Through Love, Loss, and Rebirth, was seeded at that moment. Could you find it in your heart to read us a few places and spaces along your spiritual path from this book?
Sure. I'll go forward. So,
okay. You're at the church. You're coming home.
Yeah, I'm at the church. I'm coming home. It was that experience at the church that had me wondering what was going on. I'm going to pick now something. I'm going to skip time. So that was my first experience with spirituality. I had a few other experiences, but then my late husband died, and I felt like God betrayed me. You know, I had done all this stuff. I was going to church, doing all these things, and then my husband died. So I will read you the passage, what it felt like when I felt it totally betrayed by God. I call the chapter Adrift. I feel lost, as if in a small sailboat in the middle of the open ocean under a cloudy sky with no land in sight. The night is young, and I have already finished a bottle of wine. World in My Eyes by Depeche Mode is playing on the stereo. Happy memories flash through my mind and disappear just as rapidly. Will I ever feel happy again? I tend to sing along, to feel joy through the music, but instead, fear keeps me firmly in its grip. My mind is stuck on the auto-repeat button, playing over and over again, my life and my loss. This nighttime crisis has become my routine. In the morning, my head aches. I recall with disgust the fear, the unhappiness of the previous night while under the effects of the white wine. I make an oath never to drink again and to quit smoking. My oath lasts only until the same evening. So I was going through that on and on, and then I receive a message from Mother Mary. All that you have learned, all that you are learning, continues to prepare you to cope with anything. Previously, you were robbing yourself, stealing away from God, and betraying your divine essence. Now you can plunge voluntarily into life with knowledge, which is far better than being thrown in to toss upon the waves without direction. You have chosen your path, and it has chosen you. If you know where you are, you will get to where you're going. Being firm in your faith is the glue that holds you together. That changed everything. I heard that. I received that. And I stopped drinking, I stopped smoking, I went to a ashram, stayed there for a while, and that was the beginning of my spiritual journey.
Well, that sounds like you really, really came from the dark and into the light with some very, very high guidance. So right now, you finished this book, The Ocean of the Divine, in the last couple of years, and has its message helped other people along their path?
I hope so. Every once in a while I receive an email from somebody that said, oh, I'm facing divorce and it's the darkest time in my life, and but it helped me. I saw that things, that there is hope. And that's the message, that there always is light at the end of the tunnel. When you're going through the darkest, darkest period, I feel that we are given a choice at that time. We can go back to our repeated pattern of, you know, fear, anxiety, worry, all the stuff that I was doing. Or we could choose to step away from that. It's a breakthrough. That's when a breakthrough comes. A growth happens to us. So that's the guidance I give to people.
Well, I know that a lot of personal work and spiritual work happens in all of us. And to me, you seem very conscious of what was going on with you spiritually, and mentally and emotionally now. Was it that apparent to you when you were going through it?
Well, yeah, yes, it was. Because as an engineer,
some people say I didn't get it till 10 years later, you know. But that's very, very, very enlightened to be that conscious of knowing what you're going through, you know. So
yes, I'm an engineer. So I investigated it. I studied it. And I was very blessed to, from the beginning, just meet up with the best teachers, Amachi. I don't know if you know the Hugging Saint.
I do.
Okay, she was one. Pierre Vilayet Inyat Khan, he's now dead. He was a Sufi master. He came to Washington, D.C. for three days right before he died. And I was amazed. The way he taught was he would just talk. He would sit there in meditation and listen to him. And in a room full of 100-some people, I felt it was a personal conversation with me. Once I had a dream. I dreamt, it was a very realistic dream. A man appeared to me, and he said, "Come to me to Cyprus." And I go, "Who are you?" And he goes, "Daskalos." And that was it. And I woke up because it was so vivid. And I asked around, who was this Daskalos? Finally, I found somebody who knew that he was a prophet that had died, and he lived in Cyprus. So I was wondering if anybody was continuing the teaching, and I did find his daughter. So I used to go to Cyprus. So like I said, I feel blessed to have found really good teachers, and then with the yoga as well.
Okay, and what is your website, Catherine?
My website is lifeasyoga.org. It is in the works. I'm having somebody, I did all I could, and then I got stuck, and just recently I found somebody to help me with the rest of it. But it's up. People can see what I'm
doing. Yeah, I'm on it right now, and I see a beautiful view, some beautiful pictures, and I see a whole section on coaching. And I think you are a certified life coach. Is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm a certified life coach. And so the lessons I learn, I'd like to help others with their issues.
And what kind of people are attracted to you for coaching right now? I know to me, at different times in my life, my students, different types of people were attracted to me. So who are you coaching right now?
Right now, there's two men, and for them it's not personal, it's more financial. So we're working on manifesting abundance. And I am coaching a woman who's going through a very nasty divorce, and that's it.
Wow, those are two vastly different topics, and I think that you must be very skilled as a coach to be able to coach people in such different but similar places in their life. So can we get a coaching session with you on the phone or by Skype?
Sure. You know,
and
what
I imagine there's some place on your website.
Yes,
that has
it,
your
it talks about
mm-hmm.
Yes, on my website there's a tab that says coaching.
Uh-huh. I'm there.
And it
there it is down at the bottom.
Yes, and it has my phone number.
Okay. So it looks like you do a wide variety of things. It looks like you teach workshops. Now tell me, what was the greatest spiritual lesson you've ever learned along your path?
Forgiveness.
Oh, boy. And that one just seems to come up every decade or every 5 years again and again, doesn't it? And I think
Yes.
And people underestimate it. They say, "Oh, I already did for forgiveness in the 80s. I don't need to do forgiveness." And to me, forgiveness is like waking up. You know, it's a daily or you have to start with yourself too sometimes.
Well, that's what it is. Yeah. First, forgiving. In my case, forgiving myself for being so. Say stupid and trusting something. And I had to start there. Once I forgave myself, then it was easier to start working on the other person. And I realized, well, everybody is doing, I believe, the best they can. And maybe somebody's best isn't up to my standards, but they're doing the best they can where they are. So if I just look at it like that, then it became easier for me to forgive.
And you know, sometimes I have to forgive myself for not following my intuition. And then sometimes I have to forgive myself for following something that wasn't my intuition. And it's such a gentle but persistent, and sometimes it's a strong wheel that moves us through our physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual life. So forgiveness is a key for you, and it's probably something that you coach and teach a lot. What do you think was the most ironic, strange spiritual experience you ever had, besides the church one? I think that's pretty magnificent.
Oh, well, this was in a Kundalini yoga camp. And we would do something called white tantric yoga. This is it was outside over a covered open area in New Mexico. There was about 1,500 people, and we had to sit body to body. And in the white tantric, you're either the meditations are either 31 minutes long or 62 minutes long. And in either type of meditation, your arms are up for 32 minutes or over an hour, or your fingers are on the other person's, your partner's third eye, that kind of thing. So the whole point of it is to get out of your body because you can't keep the arms up. And it did happen. Well, it also, there's an energy that runs through all those lines of people. It's called, they call it like a Z energy, and you feel it when you're doing it. Just imagine 1,500 people meditating. It's supposed to release stuff from your subconscious. So I was there, I was doing this, and all of a sudden, around my body, I saw this big black bug. It looked like something you would see in science fiction. It came out of me, this monster thing, and it was just hanging around in my field. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this must be like a bunch of my, stuff. And I don't want it to come back. And as soon as I thought, how can I get rid of this? This wind started to blow. We were pelted with sand, and that thing went away. And it looked like a big black crab, like a monster thing. So that was the strangest thing I've seen.
Well, I think that's really interesting. One time I was in Los Angeles and I was working with a voice coach. And because my voice is important, I talk all day, I teach at night, I talk all day. I was working with this voice coach who was pretty spiritual, and voice coach, of course, to the stars. And he sits down and he starts working on me. And I'm like, well, okay. And then, boom, something black the size of a raccoon jumped out of me and ran and fled into the electrical outlet in the wall and disappeared out the electrical outlet. And I saw it just as dark as it could be. And he just kind of looked at it, shrugged his shoulders, and kept on working. So I understand that in the healing process and in the being process, there will be many things that we feel, many things that we see, many things that we think that are not quite normal with the physical world. That was a very interesting experience. So I'm going to take a deep breath.
Well,
take a deep breath.
I'd like to add to what you just said. Like I said, I like to investigate things and study them. So in Christian mysticism, that man Vasconcelos did talk about elementals. And he said, when we have a thought with an emotion and it keeps repeating and repeating and repeating, especially if it's a negative thought with a negative emotion associated with it, eventually this thing becomes an entity almost like in you.
An energy form or something connected to the body,
An energy form, because you're putting energy into the thought and the emotion are an energy. And so the more you feed it, the bigger it becomes. And it wants to keep being fed, so that thought keeps coming up. Oh, I'm not good enough. Or all this, this always happens, that kind of thing. But it keeps feeding it. And then I read how Vasculus used to, he was able to get rid of those. He had healing practices where he did, just like your shaman did, remove those elementals from people.
And there are, a long time ago, there was a healing technique in the United States called Mary L. And it was taught by a beautiful gray-haired lady who died sometimes in the late 70s or early 80s. And unfortunately, she only taught people to be practitioners and not to ever to be teachers, but pulled out thought forms. She had things called embryos. She taught you how to distinguish, like, what element was running it. And there was also something very, very curious, which I do teach in my exorcism class, my week-long exorcism. There's a form, a void form, that takes shape when you don't. When you don't do something, when you don't help others, when you don't, when you know something is wrong, let's say, for example, you know that the neighbor is sexually abusing their children or beating their children and you don't take any steps, there's a void ether form, because usually the forms are fire, water, air, earth, and there's a void ether form that happens that starts pushing your own life force out of your body, because it's not what you do or what you think, it's because you don't. You shut that out, you don't want to rock the boat, you know. And I found that a very, very, which I learned from her years and years ago, a very interesting concept, because the more I looked at people, the more I determined sometimes some people do all sorts of crazy things that mess up their lives. And sometimes people don't do anything, and that messes up their life. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I'm sure if somebody saw somebody beating their kids and did nothing, there's some level of guilt in them, and they probably think it over and question themselves, well, should I act? Should I not do it? And again, there's that energy, and it seems like a form would take place that makes sense.
But also, the shame and guilt will be on that. You know, there will be other physical or elemental forms in the body, but that void form was something that was, new to me, and I had already, studied the elements and all that by then. But I find that interesting. And it's amazing what people will go through. 1958, I taught Hatha Yoga at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I was, there were six of us in the yoga class. Six of us in the yoga class, and the girl leading it laughed. I went back like 20, 30 years ago to University of Michigan Ann Arbor. There were something like 6,000 people doing yoga there, in different classes around the university. And I find that we learn things a lot quicker now. That what it taught, it took me a year to teach somebody in the 60s, I can teach in 2 hours now. And I find that the humans have become more aware, more conscious, more willing to do things. Have you not found this in your studies?
I find it in my yoga classes. I noticed in the beginning when I first started teaching, it was hard for students to quite comprehend the philosophy, the science or philosophy with the yoga. And now I'm finding that they're more accepting of it. and more curious about it.
Yeah, I remember. You mean there's something more to yoga than just the body position? Okay, let's talk.
I have an interesting story for you. One of the first yoga classes I taught, I had just been certified, and I was teaching in Virginia, in Great Falls, Virginia. And one night, this young man comes to my class, and he was the only student. He was probably in his late 20s, 6 foot something, this huge guy. And he said his wife had given him a yoga class as a Christmas present, so he was using it. So I took him to a Kundalini yoga class. Towards the end, this man just started bawling. He was crying so intensely. The owner came in to see what I had done to him.
Oh, my God.
And we were just watching him for a while. And then he went to sobbing. And then after 5 minutes of this, when he was ready to stop, he looked at me and he said, I had to let this out. He was a vet from the first Gulf War. And since he had come back all those years, he couldn't keep a job. He was having nightmares at night, that kind of thing. And he said he was experiencing that issue that he kept dreaming about and was causing the nightmares in the class, and he felt he had released it. And he said, Kathy, you have to go to Walter Reed and help the people coming back today. I said, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm prepared for this. And he kept calling me, like, go. Finally, I tried to figure out how to get there. Well, it turns out that I met somebody at a class, and they got me into Walter Reed. And he was a psychologist, so he wanted me to go and sit in the classes he was having. So I sat through there. I was there when a young man had lost one of his legs. He was being treated for that. He was an amputee, and he had just found out that his young wife, who received the $150,000 check for losing a limb, took the money and ran and just left him there. So the psychiatrist is like, okay, what can you do? I go, well, I think this is way above my pay grade. I guess what I'm trying to say is, even if it's one yoga class, you can experience a huge release of something. And that wasn't the only person. He was probably the best example I have, but I've seen it with many people where in that one class, there's a release that happens unexpectedly. Another time, a woman came in. Again, it was the only person in my class. She had just was released from rehab, and she was totally stressed out. So we did a yoga class, and she was laying down in Shavasana, just resting. And as she was laying there, I saw the Virgin Mary go over her and start working on her. And when the class was over, this woman looked 20 years younger. And she says to me, she gets up, she goes, oh, my God, I feel so great. It must have been all that breath work. I go, yeah, a little bit of help, but I didn't tell her that. So
It is interesting how many times angels and ascended masters appear. And sometimes it's really appropriate to tell them, and sometimes I just don't. Because in some ways it's, I don't know. You know, I never know. I have a feeling whether I'm supposed to or not. And I have seen the divine step in more times than most people would expect. And with that statement, we're going to go to our half an hour commercial break, and we'll be right back with Catherine.
Please join us every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for Stargazing with Star Fuentes. For over 50 years, Star has been a pioneer in metaphysics. She has learned a lifetime of priceless information and is eager to share it with you as only she can. Visit her website at starfuentes.com, then tune in as she covers a weekly topic and then opens up the lines for your questions and comments. Again, that's Stargazing with Star Fuentes every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
And we will be taking calls. The number is 657-383-1612. And yoga is extremely powerful. Now, you teach the Kundalini yoga, correct?
Yes, I do.
And I imagine you have classes in Virginia and elsewhere?
I have classes in Virginia. I teach, I'm teaching a workshop 22nd of February. This is on manifesting abundance. Seems a lot of people are interested in that right now. I'm teaching several classes this month. I have a meetup group set up for the Virginia Beach area where I live, and it announces the classes. And that's where I post things till my website gets ready.
Well, I find cash a very interesting subject, prosperity an interesting subject. And I've worked a lot with sexual abuse, and I've developed 4 yoga positions that help let go of the energy of sexual abuse. Now, let me tell you what I found out about cash, abundance, prosperity, that if your feet or hand chakras are blocked, you cannot receive or you cannot give cash appropriately. So one of the things that I always check with people is to make sure that both their giving and their receiving hand, and that they're on the planet Earth with their right foot sending and their left foot receiving. I have seen people spend thousands of dollars, go to workshops, invest their money in things, and while everybody else is making money, their real estate flopped or whatever, and they haven't paid attention to whether they're actually grounded to the earth. And as spiritual as we may be, cash is a material plane energy. And the foot chakras and the hand chakras, I always pay extra special attention to when dealing with abundance, prosperity, or cash classes. What do you think about those topics there with chakras there, Catherine?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just that. Those are key points. I like to work with clearing all the chakras. Then there's the whole thing of self-worth, self-affirmation. There's another thing with radiance. The more radiant you become, the easier that you can attract things that you want.
And I know what radiant is, but for my listening audience, tell me about being radiant.
Well, there's a glow to you. You become magnetic. I'll put it in scientific terms. You're magnetic. You could set goals, and you see how easily things come to you. You don't have to push. Not being radiant, not being magnetic, you have to push for things. You have to work hard to achieve what you want. But if you're magnetic, things come to you. You attract things to you. And there's ways to build up your magnetism or your radiance. Now, with yoga, we work with the pranayama, with breath, to build up radiance. And also we work with the kundalini, trying to raise that kundalini, because, again, that will give you the wisdom to be on your path, to know your truth.
And to manifest it.
Now, I work, being in kundalini, which is part of the tantric tradition, I work very extensively with 3 chakras. The 3rd chakra, your power center, because you need that power. You need to have that drive to move forward, the confidence to do it. But then the heart, because power without being guided by the heart is ruthless. And we see that all over the place now in the world. And then the third eye and the higher regions for the wisdom. So you need wisdom, love, and power. And then really you can manifest the life you want. Now, it just doesn't happen like that. It takes work, but you can manifest that life. Once these centers become strong, once you become confident in who you are,
And you know that first chakra is so important. People get into fight or flight. And so many people, my people who have been hippies now for 40 years, they're fleeing from the government, and they're fleeing from square life, and they're fleeing so hard in that chakra that they're not centered in it. And then I have so many people that spend all day arguing about politics and arguing about environment, but don't... Well, they don't contribute. They don't go out there and help the hungry. They don't, you know, go out there and pick up, do something physical to help that. But they argue about it. And that fight and flight, finding your center, is finding your power in that first chakra. And people are either running from stuff or fighting something and going, why can't I hold down a job? Why can't I manifest? And I talk to them that it's in the fight or flight in the first chakra, and they're like, well, I'm above the first chakra. It's all heart, you know? And I'm like, it's got to be more than heart. You have to manifest that heart on the physical. You have to manifest that wisdom. You can have all the wisdom in the world if you never share it or use it or have the heart to share it or use it. It's not going to benefit you or anybody else. I think the three chakras are very, very important, and I'm glad that you do your work with those three.
Yeah, so. I have found a lot of people in some communities, they focus solely on the higher self, the higher chakras, and ignore the first, second, third. And so I just find that there's an imbalance there because, yes, you can open up your higher chakra. You can receive all kinds of information, hear things, see things, clairvoyant, all that kind of stuff. But those fears, those anxieties and things will keep you from ascending to the place where you can, from growing spiritually to the place where you can grow. And that could only happen if you address the lower chakras. We are in the physical body. We got to deal with the physical.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than seeing a great psychic or a great visionary, and they're not so great because they're worried about paying the rent or, you know, they're not on that physical plane or they're worried about their phone being turned off or getting evicted because they've spent so much time up in the top three, you know, that top three, seventh, well, really, eighth, ninth, seventh, sixth chakra.
Yeah.
You know, and it's then there's so many people that are so grounded, and then there's no heart to them. So it's just amazing that you can be in a room with 10 people and all of them come from and function from three different chakras and three different sides, angles, backs, or centers from it. And we can make a whole, but then once we separate from that whole, can we become body and soul? And I don't know if I want to function. I want more than to function. You know, I want to have more friends than I can spend time with. I want to read more books and have more books than I can read. You know, I don't want to function. I want to be above functioning. I want to glow, glide through life, you know? So this whole, people tell me, all I want to do is survive. And I go, no, that's not your affirmation. You can't just want to survive. So tell us what your website is, Catherine.
It's www.lifeasyoga.org.
And tell me about your new book that's coming out later on this year or next year.
Well, I'm writing about yoga. Right now, it's pretty, it's very descriptive right now. I want to make it funny. I want to make it entertaining for people to read. And right now it's not there yet.
Well, you know, there's in moments in front of different people, funny changes. And you know, in moments in front of the same people, what was funny yesterday was not funny today. So bringing that lightness and humor into a book where it's appropriately said is very, very delicate. It's like balancing an angel on a head of a pin. Or is that 100 angels? Something like that. So, yes, you're probably going to have to spend a lot of time honing it, and the lightness will definitely be appreciated. Hey, Sean, do we have any callers tonight?
I have been screening a handful of callers, but I don't have any with questions. They're just listening to the conversation.
All right. Well, that's good. So, Catherine, tell us, what do you think it's really important for people on their spiritual path to know right now at this time?
All you need is love. When I was a young girl, I had a dream. I was taken up somewhere in the heavens, and I was told, this is the key of life. We give you the secret key, the secret to life, and it's the key to everything. And I was told it, and I said, oh, it's so simple. That, you know, that's it? And they go, yeah, you know. I woke up and I couldn't remember it. I spent a lifetime trying to figure out what it was. I'm serious. I would think about it really a lifetime. And then it came to me. I think I was in Egypt when it came to me. It's All You Need Is Love, the Beatles song.
Wow, that's very, very important for many of us and most of us. And for me, it's reminding people right now, for me, it's reminding people that you need to be in body and you need to be in soul and you need to bring the two together. And people get really, really good at sports, and people get really, really good at yoga, and people get really, really good at meditation, and people get really, really good at dreaming. And whatever you're really good at, if it's real spiritual, find something in that material, physical plane to bind with it so that your soul and your body can come together as one.
Yes, I totally agree with you. We can, as meditators, we could sit and connect with the energy of love and fill ourselves with love. But it's a totally different experience when your heart expands because you love a person and you give that love to a person or an animal or a child. And it just seems, for me at least, the more I give my love to somebody, the more my heart expands. Like the more we love, but I'm talking about love on the physical. The more I love my dog, the more my heart just expense, the more I love my children.
You know, those dogs
or the men.
Unconditional love. You know, they beat a
yeah.
dog, you can starve a dog, you can ignore a dog, and the dog still comes to your lap. They're such great teachers.
But it's
I
what
love
you
my
said.
Dog.
Oh, yeah. But it's that physical. That physical for me, and this is just my point of view, is also very important. The spiritual is great, but you also need that physical. Because there's something that happens when, you know, you fall in love with somebody.
But isn't there, I know I fall in love with people. And I fall in love with their spirit. I fall in love with their mind, with their sense of grace, with their ability to be logical, their persistence in getting things done. And sometimes it's really, really hard to express that love.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I have that issue as well. I'm very guarded because of things that happen. And it's what I need to work on. I'll just say that. I'm guarded, especially with men. I want to express, I want to show them how what a loving person I am, which I am. But I'm like, no, they'll take advantage of me.
Well, I imagine you need some healing around that issue. And you know, it's like I told one of my people that work for me, he's a musician today, I said something or other, and I said, I love you, thank you very much. He goes, what's next? And whatever we were doing, it just went right into him, and he just kept right on moving. And I thought for a second, I said, am I going to stop him, correct him, bring him back, and make him acknowledge that I said I love you, and make him acknowledge my feeling, or are we just going to, am I just going to move on to whatever's next? And I just moved on to whatever was next, because sometimes loving without somebody saying that they've received it, when somebody receives it and they don't even notice it, sometimes that is some of the most valuable loving you can have, you know? And
yes.
It's not, I love you too. I mean, that's just, the ability to love and the ability to give is very, that love is just as important as the ability to feel that love. You know, and people look back on their lives and they come to me and talk and they say, you know, I never realized how much my mother loved me till I was dead. I never realized how much da-da-da-da-da. And sometimes, whoever you loved, how deeply you loved, whatever you gave them, physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, they don't get it till decades later. But most of the time, they get it. They get it. They get it. Later, sooner, you know, and love is so different. You know, it's like loving my dog and loving the people around me in my life and loving my husband. You know, all of that is so different. And then there's just people who I hate to love, but I love them anyway. You know what I mean? You have people you hate to love. I've got
people
who are very annoying in my life, you know, and they're very annoying. And I love them, but I'm not necessarily in love with their actions.
That's a polite way of stating it, yes.
I think love is important. All right, we're just about coming up to 10 minutes before the hour. I've been talking with Catherine Gominos. She is an author, she is a life coach, and she is a yoga teacher. You can find her at lifeasyoga.org. And anything, final statement you want to make before you leave us today, Catherine?
Yes, well, I am leading a Kundalini yoga trip to Greece this June. We will be going to an island called Kalamos. It's off the beaten path. There are no tourists there. It's where my parents are from. It's a tiny little island, but this will give the people an opportunity to really unplug, connect with nature. We're going to have two yoga sessions a day, meditation, hiking. It's going to be a physical type trip. So if anybody's interested in that, if that sounds appealing, you could see it on my website. Or send me an email at kathy@lifeasyoga.org, and I will send you information. And we're pricing this really at cost, just because we want people to come.
And what would the food be like?
It will be vegetarian. We're going to have, yes. And it's all going to be grown on the island of Kalamos, prepared by these lovely ladies, and it's Greek food.
Oh, that's
now, if somebody gets sick and tired of the vegetarian, we will be going to a restaurant that's on the beach, and there they have an option to order what they like.
That sounds wonderful. It sounds like...
And then we're going to do... Yeah, and then we'll do summer solstice Delphi. You know the Oracle of Delphi?
Yeah, I remember Lifetimes there.
Yeah, so that's where we're going to celebrate summer solstice, and that's it. That's the end
of
the trip.
And how many days is the trip?
It's 10 days.
Oh, that sounds absolutely wonderful. And is your last name Greek?
Yes, it is. I'm Greek.
Oh, well, that's, well, what better than someone to win the lineage to take us to a Greek island? I mean, what
that's
better
right.
energy can we have? I want to thank you for being with us today, Catherine. And please, people, go to her website, participate in her life as she participates in other people's lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Star. Many
You're
blessings.
Well.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlightening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, please visit her website at starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660. Good night.